from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the disappearing arguments for mandates, New York seeks less qualified if they are vaxxed, and the trucker convoy in Canada now has a counterpart in the U.S. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. To start off today's show, let's join Family Research Council President Tony Perkins as he introduces our first topic.
I want to go very quick. I'm going to play a clip from Senator Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor earlier today talking about, you know, all this stuff with the coronavirus, the COVID, and how a lot of the world is now realizing, look, it's time to stop it. Well, it's time to pull the plug on this pandemic mindset here in America as well. Play the clip, please.
It's time for the state of emergency to wind down. But disturbingly, whether or not we should trust the science and reclaim normalcy is somehow becoming a partisan question.
It is. Science is no longer really the guide that we follow. Now, you might remember back in June of 2020, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, claimed in an interview that the COVID shutdown saved millions of lives at a time when there were more than 2.1 million confirmed cases of COVID in the United States and nearly 118,000 deaths.
People get confused and they say, wow, you know, we shut down and we caused a great disruption in society. We caused great economic pain, a loss of jobs. But if you look at the data, now that papers have come out literally 2 days ago, the fact that we shut down when we did and the rest of the world did has saved hundreds of millions of infections and millions of lives.
But a new meta-analysis conducted by a team at Johns Hopkins University has concluded that the, quote, lockdowns have had little to no public health effects. They also found little to no evidence that lockdowns had a noticeable effect on COVID mortality rates, reducing mortality in the United States and Europe only by 0.2%. While every death is a tragic loss, did the lockdowns do more harm than good? With me to talk about this and more is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. He is a professor of medicine at Stanford University and one of the authors of the Great Barrington Declaration, a statement advocating an alternative approach to the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Bhattacharya, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
So your thoughts on this report out of Johns Hopkins?
Well, first, may I just make a comment about what Dr. Fauci said in June of 2020? He was reflecting about a paper that had been published earlier that did a model of how many lives would have been lost without a lockdown. This is an example of garbage in, garbage out. The model built into it had this assumption that if you locked down, if you kept people apart from each other, if you closed schools, if you made funerals so that only no one could attend, if you had forced people to die alone, well, then you would save lives. The COVID would stop spreading. And then they compared that against how many people actually died and said, oh, look, we saved 2 million lives or whatever the number was. That was false then, and it's false now. It's a very simplistic model of how the world actually works. The actual experience of a lockdown in rich countries like the U.S. is a certain class of people that can benefit from a lockdown, people who don't lose their jobs if they work from home, stay safe. Well, that only worked for a certain group of people, you know, a laptop class. For most of the country, they had to go to work to feed their families. They had to go to work to take care of society, keep it going. And so it's not a surprise that this new study that looks at actual real-world evidence of lockdowns finds so little evidence that it actually worked. It doesn't actually, although it may be attractive to some people to think about, well, if we just stay apart, the disease stops spreading. That isn't how societies actually function and cannot function. The lockdowns themselves were cruel in what they did to people, to keep people apart, instilled fear in people. And yet, nevertheless, the disease spread. And, you know, 80% of the deaths have been above the age of 65 because the disease is so sharply damaging people older. Well, lockdowns didn't stop the spread. In nursing homes, where 40% of the deaths are, they're a absolute failed policy, probably the single worst public health mistake I've seen in my lifetime.
So when you look at public policy decisions, as you just articulated, a host of issues related to lockdowns. I mean, you have economic issues, you have social issues, you have mental health issues. But when you ask someone who's in charge of infections to give you, you know, hey, what should we do about these infections? Well, if he's only focused on, you know, stopping the spread of an infection or a disease, but not all of these other factors which public policy experts should be focused on. I mean, this is like asking a mortician which vitamins to use. I mean, you have to get a holistic picture of what is best for society. And I would submit that we chose the wrong model.
Yeah, in fact, it was, if you recall back, the mantra was, well, you know, you can't, if you don't have expertise in epidemiology, virology, or immunology, you're not allowed to speak up. Well, I'll tell you, like most epidemiologists, most virologists, most immunologists, they may be very good at their field, but they do not have anywhere near the breadth of vision to understand how society should be structured, how we should organize our life. They don't know if, for instance, I'll just give you one example. I think it's close to home to many people here and abroad. Is keeping kids home from school really keeping them safe? Well, what happened was during the lockdowns, the sharpest lockdowns, child abuse reporting went down, but child abuse actually went up because it's schools where child abuse is caught and addressed. The depression rates went through the roof. So one in four young adults in June of 2020 seriously considered suicide. Tens of millions of people around the world, because of the economic harm by the lockdowns, were thrown into dire food insecurity and poverty. In March of 2021, the UN estimated that 230,000 children had died from starvation and skipped medical care in South Asia alone. You need a wide range of expertise to know about these things. Right. You cannot have society run by a narrow class of scientists, and you certainly cannot have it all that power in the hands of one man who controls the budgets of an enormous number of scientists. A lot of people who had a lot of trouble with these lockdowns as an idea stayed silent. A lot of qualified people stayed silent because they feared that their reputations would be harmed, their ability to get grants would be undercut, because the person in charge of the lockdown policy was also in charge of scientific funding.
Dr. Bhattacharya, we have a little bit of a frame of reference here. We've got 2 years. We're now beginning to have some analysis of the data, but there's still, quite frankly, I think, fear of really looking at the data because of the cancel culture and how everybody's just kind of caught up in this mob mentality when it comes to, oh, you got to get a vaccine. This is what we've got to do. But when you begin to look at the facts and they're not adding up, it undercuts the credibility that those government voices have. And now when you see Pfizer appealing to the FDA to get approval under the emergency use provisions of vaccines for babies, I mean, this is going to cause some people to ask questions. Are we rushing this? Is this moving too quickly? Do we really need to do this? Because this is going to most probably lead to more mandates.
Well, I mean, if you look at the data on who's actually vulnerable to COVID, there's an enormous difference between the risk posed to children who face vanishingly low risk, lower risk of dying from COVID than the flu, especially young children, compared to older adults. Before the vaccine, the death rate among people over 70 was something like 3%, 4%, 5%. For children, it's the death rate from COVID infection is less than 0.01%. So the risk that you're protecting these little babies against is vanishingly small. On the other hand, there's still risk from the vaccine. The trials that looked at children enrolled fewer than 5,000 patients overall in the 6 month to 5 year old age group. 5,000, they didn't even have as an endpoint the prevention of disease. All they had as an endpoint was the production of antibodies. This needs far more study before it is employed at population scale to babies. I mean, it may be safe. It may not be. It's hard to tell from the data that we have alone that on which Pfizer is basing it. It certainly would need to be the evidence on establishing efficacy needs to be far better than it currently is. And I worry very deeply, as exactly as you said, Tony, that people will use this to restrict the activities of parents and kids unless they get vaccinated, essentially forcing parents to decide to vaccinate when it may or may not be in the best interest of their children.
I mean, you and I think we've talked about this before, the anomalies here and how we are treating COVID unlike we've treated any other disease or illness like this. And so we're cutting corners, we're doing things rapidly, and I understand it at first. It was being done, but now we're beginning to see a better picture that there were certain voices speaking into the public policy arena that had a very narrow view of what needed to be done. So on the backside of this, well, actually, we're not on the backside of it because we're still having these mandates here. But are you finding among your colleagues more of a willingness now to speak out as more of this evidence is coming forth that questioned the decisions that have been made to this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is that people are starting to speak up. The depth of destruction wrought by these lockdowns is enormous and impossible to ignore. And the failure of the policy, I mean, what was the promise? The promise was that we would get rid of COVID, have the virus under control. I mean, how has that worked out? The failure of those promises has started to lead many people to start speaking up that were silent before. You know, it's interesting the strategies, Tony, that Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins, who was the head of the NIH, Dr. Fauci's boss, used to try to marginalize voices, scientific voices. When I co-wrote the Great Barrington Declaration in 2020, calling for a focused protection strategy, 4 days after we wrote it, Francis Collins wrote an email to Tony Fauci calling me a fringe epidemiologist. And I work at Stanford. I may not be right or wrong, but I don't think I'm a fringe epidemiologist. Although now I put it on my business card just for fun. And then he called for a devastating published takedown, which came in the form of an op-ed in Wired magazine. Not a scientific takedown. This is a strategy they used when there was early in the epidemic. There was this question whether the disease might have been originated in a lab in Wuhan, China, rather than they organized a devastating takedown of fringe scientists who dared to say that it might be a lab leak. They did the same thing with people who said, well, look, there may be cheap repurposed drugs that might work here. They call these scientists fringe and marginalize them. It's a strategy that you've seen Tony Fauci use throughout the epidemic over and over again, whenever there were scientists outside with some expertise challenging his wisdom. And it is no way to run health policy anywhere in the world.
Dr. J, final question for you. Will science recover from this in terms of its credibility with the American people? How long will it take if it does?
I mean, I think a lot of reforms are going to need to happen. We cannot have such a small, narrow group of people in charge of science. And we certainly should have a bright firewall between people who fund science and people who make health policy. It is now very clear that the level of power, when you give a single person or a small set of people, both of those roles, you create an opportunity for corruption that I think most of us didn't realize existed before the pandemic, but we do now. So if science is to be reformed, we need to reform that.
That is an extremely good point, and I'm going to follow up on it as well. Dr. Bhattacharya, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Dr. Bhattacharya, as well as the Great Barrington Declaration, when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Religious freedom is the freedom to hold religious beliefs of one's choice and to live according to those beliefs. So, why should you care about it? At Family Research Council, we care about religious freedom internationally because we believe it is an essential human right that all governments have an obligation to protect. Go to frc.org/IRF to check out Family Research Council's latest resources on international religious freedom and learn what steps you can take to help the cause of the persecuted.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday's edition of Washington Watch Live, Tony Perkins sat down with Liberty Counsel's Matt Staver to talk about the impact vaccine mandates have had on New York's healthcare system. Here's Tony Perkins.
On Tuesday, during her regular COVID-19 briefing, New York Governor Kathy Hochul reiterated the plan she announced a month ago to spend billions of taxpayer dollars to not only stop the massive loss of healthcare workers in the state, but to increase the workforce by 20%.
We have to stop the hemorrhaging of current healthcare workers. They're still leaving. And how we do that, we say, we're not just going to say we owe you a debt of gratitude, as nice as that sounds. We also have to pay you the debt we owe. And we are investing over $4 billion in bonuses and wages for our healthcare workers.
Now, you might recall this is the same governor who just a few months ago was adamant that every healthcare worker in New York, this was before the federal mandate, that they had to have the vaccine. And she said there will be no religious exemptions for any healthcare worker. With me now to talk about this is Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel, who has argued in court on behalf of healthcare workers with religious objections to the vaccine mandates, in particular in the state of New York. Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
First, let me get your thoughts. Maybe it's just me, but I think the governor is just, it's beyond bizarre that you would go out there offering all of this money after you just drove healthcare workers out of the business because you mandated that they get this vaccine, even if they had a religious exemption or a religious concern about it.
That's right. Two states started off about the same time, and then a third one joined in. The first one was Maine, and the second one was New York, about the same time. And then Connecticut joined in as well, before these federal mandates. And New York, for example, just like Maine, they said that all the healthcare workers coming from these governors, Hochul and then Mills in Maine, had to get the COVID vaccine by a certain date. And if they didn't, they should be fired. They went even further than that, Tony, and they said you cannot, as an employer, give them religious accommodations to their sincerely held religious beliefs. In other words, you cannot abide by the federal Title VII law, which preempts anything else. You must ignore that. But if you do violate the governor's order and recognize a religious exemption and do not fire these individuals, then you will lose your business licenses. So these employers had essentially no choice but to follow the governor's order, even though they didn't want to. Now, in Maine and New York, you already had a shortage of healthcare workers in 2019 before we had COVID.
Right.
So when COVID hit in 2020, these people, many of them continued to go back to work. And some of them got out of the healthcare industry. They didn't know what they were doing. Some of them had elderly parents at home. They didn't know what they were bringing home. Most of them stayed. But we developed this concept of traveling nurses because of different outbreaks of COVID around the country. And so nurses would travel from place to place around the country to fill in those gaps because we had a shortage that predated COVID and was a little bit exacerbated by COVID. Then on top of that, you have this incredibly stupid order by Governor Hochul in New York and Mills in Maine to mandate all of them get the vaccine by a certain date and prohibiting employers from granting the religious exemptions. Early on at that time, they said that they would do one of two things to fill the gap. This was before they started the mass exodus because they didn't want to get the COVID shot, as many of them, as you said, they already had COVID and they developed natural immunity. And they didn't want, for various reasons and other religious reasons, they didn't want to get the COVID shots. So before the exodus happened, right after these governors issued the mandates, they said, well, we're going to call in the National Guard. And they made that commitment before the first healthcare worker had to leave because of this mandate. And they said, we'll start hiring foreign workers. These foreign workers are not trained in our system. And the National Guard is like putting your finger in a bathtub to try to raise the water level, because the number of workers that have left New York and Maine, as an example, are in the thousands. And the National Guard just simply doesn't have that kind of nurses or doctors to be able to come in to replace that loss. So who suffers? It's the patient. In fact, Tony, in a different state where they didn't have the same kind of mandate, but they had mandates in the state of Washington, I know someone whose wife was taken to the emergency room because she was having contractions 3 minutes apart. You would think that that would be an emergency. But when she presented at the emergency room, she was told to go home because they're only treating, quote, emergencies. They are understaffed, and to come back when your water breaks or you develop abnormal bleeding. She and her husband had to return home until she was in excruciating pain, and one of those two events happened, and then they had to rush her right back to the hospital because they were short of staff. Yeah. Short of staff because of these mandates.
Right, and people need to realize that when you have a shortage of nurses, that means you have a shortage of beds, because the number of beds are tied to the number of nurses. Matt, we're out of time, Matt, but just bizarre, the public policy that we're pursuing, and then refusing to recognize the consequences of these decisions. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Tony. They've created their own mass crisis.
Yes, they have. Stick with us, folks.
Do you find it challenging to stick to reading God's Word daily? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. The Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan takes you through the Bible so that you can stay grounded in God's truth. Start this adventure today with FRC. When you sign up, we text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So good to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, tens of thousands of truckers in Canada are protesting a recent mandate that requires drivers entering the country to be fully vaccinated or face testing and quarantine requirements. As demonstrations at the country's capital approach their seventh day, truckers in the U.S. are following suit with plans for a convoy to D.C. to protest the COVID shot mandates. I have to dust off my CB and break out my old CB handled. Well, joining me now to talk about this effort is one of the co-organizers, Brian Bass. Brian, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me. That's funny you said your CB handle. What was your CB handle? You got a CB handle? What is it?
Captain Crunch.
No kidding, Captain Crunch.
That's
mine
it.
Is Two Scoop. They call me Two Scoop out on the road.
Well, hey, look, I love the truckers. I eat at truck stops. I love to hang out there. Those guys represent what America is about: hardworking, independence. And I'm grateful for what the truckers are doing to stand up and say enough is enough. Tell us what they plan to do to D.C. and how folks can find out more about it.
Well, first off, let me be clear to say that while it's truckers that are standing up, this isn't a trucking issue necessarily. This is just to stop the mandates. We're trying to look out for our community. We're trying to look out for our healthcare workers, our teachers, our law enforcement, our military, you know, anybody that is suffering from these vaccination mandates, these vaccine mandates. We're not anti-vax. We're just we believe that you should have the choice.
That's where I am.
Yeah, it's really kind of sad that we're losing such fantastic people across the country. They're losing their jobs. They have years of experience. These are some of the most talented people in their fields. Military spends millions of dollars in training on these soldiers, and they're being, you know, forced to leave because they won't get the vaccine, because they don't want to put something in their arm. It violates not only your constitutional rights as an American, but it's violating your rights as a human being, what some would call your God-given rights, maybe. You know, on the human scale, just as a human being, you're being violated across the world. All these countries and their governments are violating your human, basic human rights. Right. And so the truckers of America taking the lead from Canada. We love our Canadian brothers up north. Thank you for all that you do. And we're taking the lead from them. And you're saying, you know what? We agree. Here we come.
Well, now, Brian, I mean, look, I know you're doing this for against the mandate in general, but it is affecting the trucking industry. I mean, you're already short of drivers. Many are saying, hey, I'm not going to do this. So It's a problem for all Americans. We already have supply chain issues. This is another example. We're just talking about nurses. We have a crisis, a shortage of nurses in this country, but yet we're forcing them. My daughter's a nurse. Forcing them to get these vaccines. I mean, this absolutely does not make sense.
No, it's really quite sad that we're losing all these people. And as far as the supply chain goes, a lot of that could be avoided. I mean, they chose to make some decisions that allowed people to basically stay home and in many cases make more money staying home than what they did going to work. Now, I don't blame them. You're making more money to stay home. Why wouldn't you stay home, right? I mean, you want the work ethic. You want people to have this work ethic. But, you know, if you're making more money at home, I think everybody would stay home. But the fact is that the shortages are coming from there's nobody to manufacture products. There's nobody to load the trucks. There's nobody to unload the trucks.
Right.
We're spending hours sitting in the docks because they don't have the employees. A lot of times they don't have the employees because places are requiring all of their employees to be vaccinated. Like the company owner, the mothership of wherever they work is saying, you can't work here. You can't have this shift unless you're vaccinated. Now that's on a company level and technically they have the right to do so. Go find another job. But those are the things that are coming into play to the supply shortage. That's why there's only two loaves of bread on the shelf at Walmart.
Right. So tell us about the convoy to D.C.
Yeah, the convoy to D.C. is starting March 1st. That actually kind of got locked in today. So congratulations to get that information almost first. But it is 100% starting on March 1st. There's a lot of planning going on right now behind the scenes. We got a lot of great groups coming together. We're taking off from California and we're making our way across the country to D.C. There's a lot of routes. The routes will be disclosed at a later time, kind of holding that a little close to the chest for obvious reasons, you know. It's coming. It's happening. March 1st. We're heading east.
Brian, all right. If you hear Captain Crunch out there, you know, it's me.
I'll holler back at you. They call me Two Scoop. Everybody can find me out on the app Getter. That's where I'm most active at. That app called Getter, and it's just my name, Brian Brian with the lower underscore last name Brazzi Brase. Follow me there. They don't censor anybody, and you can follow along for the most up to date information. We'll probably be coming through these third party apps like Telegram and Getter and things like that.
All right, Brian. We'll see you here in D.C. Good to talk with you.
Thank you. Can't wait to meet you. Will I get to meet you in person?
Yeah, I'll be there. All right. All right.
I can't wait to shake your hand.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.